Irish lady.
Blog Talk Radio.
He did.
Bye.
Love you. Is the music not starting again?
I don't think we're recording yet because the Bruce Lee hasn't talked yet.
Oh, now you sound like Mr. Roboto.
What about now? Yeah, I don't know.
Wow, well, we're getting off to a Tyler Eifert-esque start.
Yeah. Well, usually, remember how that last time you didn't know it all was going, you didn't know we were recording until she talked, and she hasn't talked yet, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's right. She hasn't done the Black Clock Radio splash, has she?
No, she has not.
She's drunk again.
Yeah.
I wonder if anybody in the comments can drop it, if you can hear us or not. And I can't find my beer.
I know how to edit all this stuff out now just through the Blog Talk Radio thing. So whatever
the interface.
Yeah.
All right. So is anybody, I'm just now logging in.
Yeah, I left a comment, we'll see. If anybody can hear us. Do I still sound bad?
You're very tinny.
Very tinny.
I don't know. I'm trying to get a post up now, or trying to get a, oh, come on, computer.
Yeah, because I would prefer not to, you know, start talking or whatever and then have her come on halfway through or anything, you know?
Right. Oh, okay, so you already got a comment.
Yeah.
All right, so what should we do here? It'd be nice if somebody chimed in. Let us know if they can hear us. I need a beer. I'm grabbing a beer. Screw all y'all.
Can you hear me at all now? Is that better at all?
Yeah, that's better.
That's better? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try to log on my phone and play and see if we can hear myself talk like that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. This sucks. Maybe Tim got an email, and we should probably get that switched over to one of us, too.
That probably would be good.
Yeah.
So should I sing? Is that what I should do at this point?
I don't know. I mean, I guess we can be as... be as awful as we want, nobody even knows because it's not doing anything.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see here. Yeah. Da, da.
Hi.
Bonjour. Hell of a good French onion dip at your service.
So I hear it. Okay, it's just playing last week's episode. You know how we have ads and we don't even get paid for it at all?
I don't know. We talked about buying a license. But,
yeah.
I mean, the free one's been working fine for 4 or 5 years or whatever.
Yeah. But, no, we have ads for the show, but we don't get any money at all for it. I guess SB Nation just sits there and collects it all.
Right.
It says live.
I'm texting
right,
Tim right now. All right, I just texted Tim, too, to see if he got an email. Our glorious blogging overlord. All right, I just texted Tim.
We are live, actually. We are.
All right. So great.
Playing,
I'm glad that...
It was playing through the phone. So I'm going to play some music real fast then. And we had 5 minutes of just nothing. So let me play some music. that won't work.
So that's going to help after the technical difficulty so far. Where's Dyes on the toilet? Come on, man. Chime in, baby.
All right. We're going to start now on three, okay? One.
Okay.
Two. Three. Well, hello, everyone. My name is Matt Weston. Oh, my God. Did she just talk?
No, that was me.
Oh, my God. All right, we're starting now. One, two, three. Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Weston, and you're listening to Battle Red Radio. Tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, baddest, drunkest of them all, BFD. How's it going?
Worst episode ever.
I don't know why she doesn't talk anymore. But BFD, did you know the Houston Texans are tied for first place in the AFC South?
I did know that. They are technically tied by record. I still think we lose the only tiebreaker, if I remember correctly, since we lost to the Cloths.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's pretty amazeballs, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, here we are. The Texans are 4-5, and our tied with the Indianapolis Colts in first place in the AFC South. And last night they beat the Bengals 10-6. Now, ahead in this game, the Bengals were second offensive DVOA, and the Texans were 20th in defensive DVOA. But if you go back to the Titans game as well, the Texans have only allowed 12 points and zero touchdowns in the last two games. Now, all this very defensive performance has occurred with the exact same personnel, pretty much, or the same players, I should say. So, BFD, what have you seen that has changed between, you know, the first six games of the season compared to the last two games that we watched just now? And what decisions have you seen Crennel make that has changed this defense for the better?
I think last night even sticks out as a considerable outlier. I think we can look at the baby-eating sister fuckers game and say, well, hey, we got to play Zach Mettenberger against a really crappy offensive line, and that pretty much tells most of the story. Last night, though, Andy Dalton is not Zach Mettenberger. The Bengals' offensive line is not that bad. They've got a couple of holes. We saw Eric Winston holding J.J. Watt all night. But they're pretty solid group, and the Bengals definitely have better offensive weapons. What I saw last night, and we could probably spend the entire episode talking about what the difference between the first six games is and what the difference the last game against the Bengals was, but it looked like we were playing a modern defense based on creating mismatches, overloads, and creating confusion for the quarterback who wasn't able to pick up the play. Just look at how many times J.J. Watt was in a two-point stance last night. I mean, we haven't seen that all year. We haven't seen Watt moving around all year. So that last night's game plan looked like it was written by somebody who actually knew what they were doing. It reminded me of a Rex Ryan defense.
Yeah, and I mean, that's all scheme things. And I saw a lot of that too as well, especially some of those like zero dog blitzes where you have two guys in the line of scrimmage and you have five guys standing up just to create confusion for the quarterback. The only other scheme thing I saw that was cool was they had Joseph playing in his usual, you know, 8-yard cushion over there on the left side. And Houston's just been getting killed on short left passes this year. And they had either the slot corner, the outside linebacker, play a hook zone where he just runs out, run the flat when the ball snapped to stop those short curl routes. And then the receiver was shut off there, pulled up, went up to the second level a bit more, crawled up, and Joseph was away and knocked down the pass. But besides the zero-dog blitzes and that was really only thing schematically I saw any different. And, you know, you have to watch the behind view, real closely and kind of pick out a lot of those things. But to me, the most noticeable thing was just how they use their personnel. I mean, we talked to 6 weeks about some of the problems where, you know, we have Vince Wilfork rushing the passer on third down. This doesn't need to happen. We don't need to have Raheem Moore playing safety because he can't cover any flow. We don't need another crappy inside linebacker playing next to Brian Cushing. We don't need Eddie Pleasant playing nickel linebacker, even though he did that last night. And so a lot of these things I saw were just putting your players in better spots to succeed, like what you touched on with Watt. So you have Covington rushing the passer on third down. You have Andre Howell starting at safety. I know McKinney was injured, but we finally have him back playing inside linebacker. And they weren't doing that crap before where they were subbing him out for, you know, guys like Dent and Tuggle. You know, McKinney played nearly the whole game and had 9 tackles last night. And so these are really simple changes that they made that I feel like had a great, you know, change and effect on this game last night.
Yeah, and let's – I know that, you know, I see question number 2, so I'll skip that topic until we hit that. But the game that Charles James II played last night, he made, in my opinion, he made one of the best plays you will see all season on a rush. On a rushing play, little tiny Charles James read the run, hit the gap, and took out the running back, and he was on a wide receiver, read the play, diagnosed, and blew it up. You just don't see, it was crazy intellectual football, instinctive football, and athletic football all at the same time. I went back and I watched that play probably 8 or 9 times, like right after it happened at the next break, just because I could, because it was that beautiful to watch him diagnose, read, and react. And just the mere fact that what he brings to that team on defense is just a lot of spirit, a lot of elan, a lot of energy, and he's keeping guys who suck off the field. So you have a lot of win-win going with that when you have Charles James II out there. Hey, dude, happy socks. Man, I misread you. You're kind of a little ass kicker. So my bad.
Yeah, and I think you talked about it whenever we talked about Hard Knocks before the season started. And just that one play where he's sitting there yelling at the other practice squad level player, you know, we have to communicate. They're going to cut us. We have to communicate. And so whenever you have these guys who are fringe level players, I feel they know how to play the game better, like they see it better visually, because if they make any mistakes wrong, they can't afford to do that because of where they're selected, how they made the team. And so they have to be perfect in nearly every single spot. They probably have to watch extra film to make up for all their problems athletically. And I think that's what you saw in that play there, with just how he just ran right between the guard and the tackle in the backfield to make that play because he's unblocked. And, you know, that was beautiful. But other than that, I don't think I really saw anything a whole lot different. I guess the biggest thing I saw different, I forgot to mention this, was just tackling. This team finally tackled well. And, you know, this year been trying to write about different teams. I've been watching, you know, different NFL teams rather than just the Texans, especially the coaches' film. And I've watched a lot of good defenses this year. And the biggest thing that stood out to me wasn't, you know, scheme or, you know, players really at all, but just how good defenses are just really good tackling teams. I mean, like, if you watch the Vikings, especially this year, they have, you know, some stars in, you know, Barr and Linval Joseph, but they're doing a lot with a lot of nobody guys, but they all can tackle. And, you know, we talked about it earlier in the year with the Texans where they just were missing tackles left and right, like the Dolphins game, the Chiefs game, the Falcons game. And here last night, they actually tackled well, and they, you know, held the second best offense in the NFL to just 6 points. And this is all the same players too. You know, it was just kind of amazing the difference between something that seems like a skill you can't learn overnight. They were so much better already this year.
Yeah, I agree. The tackling was a great, great aspect. And I don't know if we want to segue into question number 2 that you've got, because I think that's a big part of it right there.
Yeah, go into it.
So, here's the question. So normally Matt does this part, Saul, and Matt doesn't have a funny voice. It's not like making fun of little Matt with his little Minnie Mouse voice. That kind of sucks. So with Kareem Jackson missing time with an ankle injury, rookie cornerback Kevin Johnson has moved into the starting cornerback number 2 role. What are your thoughts on this season? Dude tackles. Dude plays hard. Dude has quicks. Dude has superstar written all over him. We talked about it all year. The guy jumps off the screen at you, and his ability to hit, to follow through, to hit through the runner is just wonderful. Once we get Kareem Jackson back, and we will, and hopefully we'll, you know, it's probably time to either put him in the slot or move him to safety, as we talked about. Jonathan Joseph tackles, Kareem Jackson tackles. That really right there, and you're getting A.J. Bouye off the field. So you've really improved your tackling just by having Kevin Johnson out there at the cornerback position and getting a couple of those other guys off the field.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about Johnson I really like is that you know, he made some rookie mistakes yesterday. Like, that holding call was a holding call. You know, he's grabbing the front end of the jersey right in front of the referee. And that pass interference was because he doesn't turn around and look for the ball. And but the thing is, if that's your biggest problem is your rookie year, that's incredible. Because as we saw with Kareem Jackson, as we've seen with other cornerbacks throughout the league, their first 2 years are usually pretty rough, and usually takes until year three where they get used to playing press coverage and dealing with all that physicality. And you see the same thing with young wide receivers as well. But Johnson's physical, and you know, the biggest problems he has is that he's not looking for the ball every once in a while. You know, it's kind of incredible to see. But you're spot on about his ability to tackle, and I think a lot of it is just his speed. Like that one pass deflected he had last night where his just break on the ball is just remarkable. That's a completion 90% of the time for most quarterbacks. But, I mean, just that short burst quickness is just phenomenal. And, you know, they hit on another first-round pick, and, you know, despite how bad all the other drafts are, they can get talent whenever they have that with their number one pick and haven't missed when where they can't. But, yeah, I mean, I've loved watching him play so far.
Yeah, one other thing, I'm just now finally getting a snap count for yesterday. You know, when you look at it this way, you've got, instead of Eddie Pleasant getting major snaps, and he still got enough, he got 27, instead of A.J. Boye, he only got one snap. You have Andre Howell playing the entire game, strong safety. You've got Charles James getting 50 snaps. A lot of addition by subtraction, just getting those guys off the field and replacing Eddie Pleasant and A.J. Boye with even replacement-level guys is going to make your team that much better, much less somebody who's jumping on screen at you like Kevin Johnson. It's just, you know, that is what makes a market difference in your squad.
Yeah, I didn't know James played that many
Vince
snaps.
Vince Wilfork, 35 snaps.
How many did Covington play?
Covington, 21, and the other one that surprised me was Brandon Dunn got 12.
Yeah, and that's all, you know, third down rushes probably too, because Vince Wilfork is just, I mean, he's a terrible pass rusher. I think a lot of it too is he gets tired. You know, he's a big old guy, and he should only play first and second down. I think not having played third down may help with his stamina as well too. But yeah, well, that's cool. And I guess the one other thing I want to touch on, it comes down to the defense, is that, you know, if you're like us too, and if you're listening to this, you probably fall in the same party of just idiots who have the emotional attachment to this crappy football team and watches every week. And, you know, it sucks for, you know, for fans where, you know, you want this team to win. And a lot of these changes they made, these weren't huge changes, you know. These are small little things that they've been seeing for the last 6 weeks. And these are things that should have been done sooner. And, you know, just like what we talked about earlier in the year, what Ivan wrote about. And it's made a remarkable difference for this defense, just small little changes. I understand that whenever you go into a week, there's only so much time you have the game plan, only so much time you have to implement stuff. But it doesn't take it takes a 5-minute meeting to tell Covington, hey, you're going to rush on third down. Wilfork, you're just playing first and second down now, and we're going to be rotating you out more because you look tired, you're not getting it done. It takes 5 minutes to make that change, and they just haven't done it. And, you know, what we talked about earlier, this is a defense with a lot of talent, and as we saw the holes there, and that's what kind of made us reluctant to say this should be a top-10 defense. But after watching how they played last game especially, you know, may end up being an outlier, what I'm saying may be stupid. But as of right now, we saw what should be a top-10 defense, and this is how they should have been playing all year. And they just weren't putting their guys in the right spots to succeed.
No, when you're giving Vince Wilfork that many snaps, when he looks that done, I mean, we can't be the only people on the face of the earth who see that. When we see Eddie Pleasant, the only ability he brings to the field is the ability to draw flags. We can't be the only people who see that. And so getting those guys off the field just makes a tremendous difference.
Well, we'll do what we do every week now, and we'll do our J.J. Watt Fair Play of the Game. Last night he had 2 tackles, 1 sack, 1 tackle for a loss, 2 quarterback hits, and he drew a holding penalty as well. So, BFD, which one of Watt's plays was your favorite last night?
When he called Andy Dalton the Red Ryder BB gun.
Yeah.
It was so puerile and childish. And what my favorite part about this whole thing is Andy Dalton's response talking about whatever of football, J.J. Watt's ruined it. It's like, oh, come on. Just, you know, Andy Dalton, get a sense of humor, for crikey's sake, or at least come back with something better than you're hurting the integrity of the game by making such an insult. Get laid.
And it wasn't even a good insult either. It was so lame, too. And it was like, you know, J.J. Watt just saying, well, your mom went to college on, you know, after the game was over and Dalton getting all upset. And in the incompletions post, I made a reference to, you know, Sam Dyson. You know, I'm a Texas Rangers fan. And he gave up that home run to Batista and was all upset about the bat flip. And he was like, you know, a lot of people look up to Batista. He's a star of the game. There's a lot of kids watching him. And he shouldn't be doing that. And Dalton said the exact same thing. And the Batista bat flip was, you know, a lot more in your face. And maybe you could see the argument for that. But this whole Dalton thing was just pretty inexcusable. Because it wasn't even like a, you know, he didn't call him like a bad word or curse on TV or really say anything mean. It was a terrible joke. And for Dalton to get that upset makes you think he was like some only child who was homeschooled his entire life or something. I don't know. But that was pretty bad, though.
Yeah, and I think that what we can say now is that I think I understand why he's Tim's favorite player. I hope Tim hears this.
Do you have any other thoughts on the defense at all?
I do. I have lots of thoughts on defense. Like I said, I could probably talk about the defensive effort the entire show, but I do want to point out especially Whitney Mercilus. What is this, four games in a row now? He is an absolute game wrecker. When did this happen? You know, this is somebody who we made fun of for years because he couldn't do anything but get trash sacks. He's always been decent against the run, but that's not what he was supposed to bring. He was supposed to be an off-the-edge rusher with great speed, gets the quarterback, creates a lot of havoc in the backfield. And then all of a sudden, he kind of became this run-stopping, kind of hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker-ish kind of guy. And now all of a sudden, Duke is constantly in the backfield, constantly making plays, showing quickness we haven't seen from him. Pro Football Focus has him with 8 quarterback hurries yesterday. 8. That is more than the rest of the team combined. And you know what? That sounds about right. All of a sudden, something has clicked for Whitney Mercilus that he is making that 4-year extension look like an absolute deal. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's happened to him all of a sudden, but he is on fire and easily playing the best football of his life. It's fun to watch. It's great. He was the guy I wanted. That was who I wanted. I loved watching him play in college. I loved the name. Just the name alone was worth a first-round pick. But to see him busting out like he is a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think we talked about also, you know, this year where, I mean, his punch in the run game is awesome. I mean, he just explodes and he holds that, you know, tackler tied in and then just sits and reads and then throws him off and makes a tackle in the backfield. And that's what the biggest thing I saw. I didn't see a whole lot of the pass rushing because I just watched J.J. Watt the entire game where I didn't really pay any attention to Mercilus at all. But with 8 hurries, you know, that's something that is worth going back and looking at. Maybe something I'll revisit at the end of the year. But, yeah, he's been awesome in the run game. And, you know, it sucks to have Clown on the other side, but could you imagine if they had Mack and Mercilus setting the edge every play? Just how unstoppable that defense would be. You couldn't bounce anything outside.
No, there's no way. That, and Mercilus is, it's like he's putting that together. You've mentioned the punch before. Everything seems to be coming together for him. And, oh, my goodness, is he fun to watch right now.
Yeah, that might be whenever we do the season review stuff, that might be something I might write about in the year, but not that I really have the time to really go all the way into right now. But we'll talk about the offense. And so really the only thing that kind of happened on offense was that T.J. Yates came in and threw a okay pass to DeAndre Hopkins on the left sideline, but the catch was just incredible. I'm sure I've watched the gift probably 25 times by now. But it was a left-handed, one-hand catch over Pac-Man Jones. So what was your immediate reaction to this play?
I got to admit, my immediate reaction was that, and those of us who have been around a while, Bayless Parsley, who used to blog for us, we were swapping a lot of text the last couple of days. And my reaction to him was, it was like Bob went to TJ, said, hey, TJ, throw it in that guy's general area, and he's going to take care of you. And that's what happened. So that was my first reaction. It's just you're not really surprised by the catches DeAndre Hopkins makes at this point. Just get the ball and within 15 yards of him, and we might be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I kind of shook my head in disbelief and gave a, oh, my God, mainly just because the offense was just so bad up to that point. I mean, they had that driver that kicked the field goal where Hoyer had the long scramble. They actually ran a really cool play that opened up Nate Washington. They ran the rollout to C.J. Fedorowicz. They got the ball to the goal line. But other than that, I mean, there was so many three and outs, and it was just really hard to watch. But it just kind of, like, zacked me out of my seat. It was like somebody dumped a bucket of ice water on my head whenever I saw that one live. And, it was spectacular. And, I still think he's the third best receiver in the league. I'd still put Jones and Brown ahead of him. But, I mean, he's just something to watch, though. And this is also only his third year, too.
Yeah, he's a real treasure. Talk about a transition guy between Andre Johnson and DeAndre Hopkins. We're fortunate.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Yates, he's now 3-0 against the Cincinnati Bengals. And for a history lesson, he started at quarterback when the Texans clinched their first playoff spot in franchise history by throwing a 6-yard pass to Kevin Walter with 8 seconds remaining. And then he was also the quarterback when the Texans beat the Bengals 31-10, their first playoff win in franchise history. And then this one, he came in for a concussed Brian Hoyer in the third quarter. So how much did you love the fact that it was T.J. Yates that was the one who came in and pulled this win out?
There's something so romantic about it, right? That, you know, we'll always have the 80 for 80 and, you know, T.J. driving that. And his incredibly slow motion scramble to pick up a first down in that game at Cincinnati where they were at, you know, last night. It was just kind of perfect. It was just kind of perfect.
Yeah, I always enjoy in life whenever, like, little things like that just kind of pop up out of nowhere and just kind of, you know, leave you just kind of, like, shaking your head in disbelief. And that was kind of one of those things where, of course, of all the people, you know, who was to come in and make plays like that, it was Yates, especially after having Mallett get cut and the past 2 weeks, and, of course, him coming back in, too, as well. But Hoyer did play the majority of the game, and, you know, I felt he was about the same as usual. But have your thoughts on Brian Hoyer changed at all, especially after the, you know, Titans game and so far this season?
I guess this is how I look at it. And credit goes, I had already kind of had this thought, but I need to give credit to somebody who said it on our listserv, is that when you look at it this way, we brought in T.J. Yates off the bench, who basically put up the same kind of numbers that Bob's handpicked quarterback Brian Hoyer put up. And I think, you know, there's a whole lot of bad decisions that go behind that. Hoyer looked good last night. They had him on the move a little bit more. He is athletic enough to do that. That was good to see for massive, massive change that really needed to happen. It was good seeing Hoyer scramble a little bit more, especially when he had wide open Green in front of him. You know, you can talk about how, you know, he's got, you know, this pass rating. But last night, he, once again, scattershot arm, poor accuracy. He is a fine backup quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's the best sentence at all to describe Hoyer, is that, you know, he's a fine backup quarterback, but not somebody who you want, you know, start for entire season. And, you know, earlier this week, Bill O'Brien did say that he did admit to the team that he was sorry for benching Brian Hoyer after week one. So what are your thoughts on this admission of guilt?
I don't know. And so let me back up just a little bit. There is a reason Brian Hoyer was pulled in that first game. It's because he was absolute ass. The first game of the season, our first play of the season line from the line of scrimmage was an interception. Hoyer later fumbled. Look, he's 30 years old. You've already got a sample size that tells you he has poor accuracy. He's not going to win your football game. So the decision to put in Mallett, I feel like, was one that was based on, let's see what we've got in this kid. He had one healthy game last year. He got hurt the second game. Let's see what he's got. So now you're going to apologize. What is it that you're really apologizing for? You're apologizing because Mallett didn't work out? You're apologizing because you figure out what you got in Hoyer? I don't get what the apology, I don't get the point of it, I guess. So my thought about it is why? Is it because you can look back in retrospect and say, hey, Ryan Mallett doesn't know how to use an alarm clock, so I'm going to apologize to the team? You know, it's like the ultimate in 2020 hindsight.
Yeah, I think he should be more apologizing for not taking Bridgewater, Derek Carr in the 2013 draft. And he should be apologizing for not doing anything to answer the quarterback situation, not by going with the unproven younger guy who you don't know what you have and try to move forward through the season like that. I mean, there's something to apologize for. You know, if I switch bodies with Bill O'Brien by the time the season started, you know, like some Freaky Friday sort of thing, I would start Ryan Mallett just because you don't know what you have at all. You know Hoyer is a guy who can succeed about like a little bit less than Fitzpatrick can when you have a capable run game. And that's about all you get with Hoyer. But with, you know, Mallett, like we've talked about before, if there's a 10% chance he's a starting quarterback, it's worth taking that 10% chance because without one, you can't, you know, consistently win games in the NFL at all.
Yeah, and I agree. And so a question just popped up from Tick Womp that I think is a good one to fit in here. Do you think Gates has a future here? For being on the roster a short amount of time, he came through and seemed to run the offense well enough. Or is Yates just Bengals kryptonite? Well, no, I haven't looked it up, but Yates has got to be right around 29, 30 years old. So he's definitely not the quarterback of the future. They already had its size of uniform when they signed him. He knew where to find the stadium. He knew where to park. He knew a couple of the guards at the gate. You know, I think that's probably that might be the biggest reason we signed him, because he was just the best of the worst out there. No, he's not your quarterback of the future. Is he Bengals kryptonite? Heck yeah.
Well, I also Yates too is he knows where the Walmart is to buy an alarm clock at too, so he can actually make it there and practice on time. But yeah, he's 28. I mean, we know what we have with Yates is. Like, he's a third-string quarterback. And I'm still kind of mad after that Baltimore game in 2011 where he threw those three interceptions that really cost that game, especially that one in the red zone. And the entire time, I just thought, you know, if Schaub was healthy, they would be in the AFC Championship game right now. And I just thought that over and over and over again the entire game. And so, like, Yates is cool. Like, I always have a little, you know, piece of my heart for TJ Yates. But, no, he's not a future quarterback of the Texans unless – you know, Bill O'Brien is just trying to purposely get fired. But anyways, it's taken 9 weeks, and the Texans have finally started the offensive line they imagined in August. And the offensive line is left tackle Dwayne Brown, left guard Xavier Suafio, center Ben Jones, right guard Brandon Brooks, and right tackle Derek Newton. So did you watch this unit perform at all on Monday, and what did you think of their performance?
Yeah, I think this was the most important part of the game. The kind of the takeaway from last night is you finally had guys where you want them on your offensive line, with the exception of Duofilo. Derek Newton lined up next to Brandon Brooks on the right side is really a strong point of your line. Brooks did struggle a little bit yesterday, but getting Derek Newton out of playing guard and back to his much more natural right tackle position is just, it's a huge move. That's a huge upgrade on the offense. By itself. Ben Jones, goodness gracious. I don't know what to say about Ben Jones. Yeah, he was much better. There was one play in particular that stuck out to me, that Geno Atkins overran Ben Jones so quickly, he opened up a gap, which allowed a nice pickup. I think it was like a 7 or 8 yard pickup on that, just because Ben Jones was so bad and Geno Atkins just ran right through him. But at the same time, you didn't see a lot of Geno Atkins in the backfield last night. So, you know, props were it to do. Clearly, left guard is a huge issue, and I think that we're pretty clearly seeing the decline of Dwayne Brown, who's not had a very good season by his standards. If I were to look at the team, and if I'm going to ignore the quarterback position like Bill O'Brien does, I'm thinking you're going to have to look for your next left tackle of the future very, very soon.
Yeah, I would like to talk about, you know, Dwayne Brown more in depth, but I just haven't watched enough of the offensive line. You know, coaches from all to really have an opinion. you know, I haven't seen anything egregious from him, but I actually spent most of last night watching, you know, Suofio play because I was excited to watch, you know, Brooks, and I was excited to watch Brooks against, you know, these defensive tackles. And then Suofio started, so I ended up watching, you know, both of them back and forth, and he was good. Like, I'm, you know, like, I was really impressed by how well he mirrored, how, you know, how, like, there just wasn't any big mistakes is what you kind of look for live. And there just wasn't any pressure at all on Brian Hoyer. And I'm actually going to write an article this week on this on the offensive line, how they performed yesterday, mainly because it's the first time they've actually all played together. And I watched the first quarter today, and, I mean, they were moving guys, especially, you know, the deuce block with Bram Brooks and Newton. I mean, they're driving the defensive tackle back 4 yards. The ace block with Ben Jones and Suofio are moving the defensive tackle back, or moving the one technique back 4 yards. I mean, they're moving guys to the point of attack. Then you just see one versus one blocks with, you know, Dwayne Brown, where it really doesn't matter. He's just not trying to get beat. And pass protection, they did a nice job. Suofio still has issues, you know, picking up blitzes, but it's mainly because he hasn't played, you know, enough. But, yeah, they were moving guys. And I guess the one thing I saw, I've only watched the first half, that was an issue, was they weren't peeling off the first level to the second level very well. And one of the things I've kind of learned this year is that the bigger runs, you know, the runs of 20 yards, you know, 30 yards, those usually occur not because of one great block, but because every single blocker is covering up a man. So if you have six guys on the line of scrimmage, you're going up against a nickel, every single guy on the defense needs to be covered up, and then the running back needs to make a play to beat somebody in the secondary to break something deep. But they just weren't covering up guys very well. But, I mean, those blocks in the first level were just, you know, incredible, and I haven't seen them drive guys down the field at all, you know. And, I mean, even last year I was watching more offensive line play. I wasn't seeing them drive guys at all like this.
Yeah, and I'm going to disagree with you about Suofio, at least when it comes to pass blocking. The sack that he gave up last night was just egregious. He had a guy blitzing right in front of him, and he went to go double-team.
Was that in the first quarter?
A guy with Dwayne Brown. I'm sorry?
Was that in the first quarter?
I believe so. Yes, that was early in the game.
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
go ahead.
I watched the behind view on that, and it seemed like he. What I saw is that I guess Jones was slid over the wrong gap. So it seemed like he should have slid over to the left A gap or the right A gap. And so whenever he slides over to the right A gap, you know, you have Suofio's the B gap, Brown's the C gap, and they're running a stunt where the defensive end comes inside. And that led to Suofio and Brown doubling that defensive end. Then that A-gap was open for the one technique. And then Jones tried to come back later to it. And then Grimes is supposed to look inside to outside, but he doesn't. And he should have hit that defensive tackle instead of coming out to the outside linebacker. And so I don't know exactly how – I haven't watched enough. I need to finish watching the second half to see how they do their slides enough. It's based on where the running back is or if it's based on where the one technique is. But it was either Jones or Suofio, but it wasn't like a physical thing. It was more just like a mental mistake, just blitz pickup.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I think he also struggled. I think he struggles with being in the right place at the right time and pass blocking still. Run blocking looks decent. Pass blocking looks nightmarish at times.
Yeah. And I'll look at it some more. They just don't really throw it. I didn't throw the ball really at all in that first half to really see anything other than that. But, yeah, I was surprised. They were moving some guys, which was good. Now, we'll talk about the running backs because the run game was still abysmal, even with this offensive line, even, you know, as we talked about where they weren't having anything huge, you know, go wrong. And like I saw in the first half, they're moving guys. But they still only averaged 3.3 yards a carry. And this was greatly helped by a 15-yard Brian Hoyer run. We looked just at the running backs. Blue had 22 carries on 12 yards, which is 1.8 yards a carry. Polk had 14 yards on 4 carries, which is 3.5 yards a carry. And Jonathan Grimes had 33 yards on 6 carries, which is 5.5 yards a carry. Now, did you see anything at all as far as the running backs go? And do you think the problems with the running game is more offensive line, or is it more based on the backs they have there?
I really think it's based on the backs that we have. Alfred Blue, the line that I had last night was Alfred Blue has less ball carrier vision than Stevie Wonder. He had multiple holes that he could have hit last night, phrasing, but instead decided to run up the back of his offensive line multiple times. It was, you know, he rushed 12 times for 22 yards with a long of 5. That's beyond ridiculous. Grimes was 6 for 33 for 5.5. Polk was 4 for 14 for 3.5. Look, there are holes there. There were holes there last night. The other two running backs were doing a decent job of hitting them. Blue cannot, period. The problem, our biggest problem with Alfred Blue is every once in a while he'll put up a 30 rush, 150 yard game, and that we say this is our running back of the future, and we keep trying to have him tote the rock. He is not the guy to do that. He is a plotter, no vision, no wiggle, no speed. He really, quite honestly, he's a wonderful special teamer. He is a terrible running back. Time to get him off the field. Give Grimes, give Polk those rushes.
Yeah, I mean, even last year, what we talked about before the season again was that Blue was the worst running back in the NFL last year, according to DVOA, and I think he was second to last according to DYAR. And you know, this year he's been terrible again as well. I think one of the weird things though is that they haven't stuck with Blue the entire year, and I'm not saying that they should. What I'm saying is that they have tried to go Chris Polk for an entire game. They've tried to go Jonathan Grimes for an entire game, and it doesn't work either. I mean, there's no answer at all for the running back situation for any three of these guys. They're all crappy, you know, crappy running backs. And the one thing I saw watching that first half was that they're just really timid. And I don't know necessarily if it's a lack of vision or, you know, probably so, but they're just timid. You know, they're getting a handoff and they're watching and bouncing rather than just going and hitting the hole. You know, if you're not that good at cutting back at all, there's no reason to try to fake it. Hey, you know, get the ball and hit the A gap as hard as you can and pick up 6-7 yards. I mean, they're just not, you know, attacking enough, and they're just being just too, like I said, timid before, but they're just bouncing and shifting rather than just running straight forward. I think we need more of a vertical running game with those three. They're trying too much to be like Arian Foster, and nobody's like Arian Foster.
No, and that goes back to, you know, we talked about that during the season, is what kind of offensive line do we have? Do we have a zone-blocking scheme offensive line, or do we have a power-run scheme offensive line? Well, right now the answer is neither. And we don't have – okay, well, let me take that back. With Darren Newton and Brandon Brooks, you certainly have the personnel for a power run scheme. But what makes both of those guys special at their positions is their agility. So you're also kind of blowing that up out of the water by just turning them to power guys. So mm-hmm. On the left side, though, Ben Jones, Suafilo, Dwayne Brown, those are very clearly VBS guys, very clearly. So we don't have the personnel to run a power run scheme. We've got a zone-blocking offensive line that we're trying to run a power scheme more often than not with three running backs who do not have the vision to run a zone-blocking scheme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think they're fine running power every once in a while. Like, if you want to pull Brooks around a double team, if you want to pull Sophia around double team, it works. You know, both those guys are good in space. And I think also whenever you're – like, if you have Suafilo and Brown in a double team, that's not exactly what you want. But, I mean, Newton and Brooks are just so nasty together. I mean, they can drive defensive tackles 6 yards up the field. And part of the problem is on double teams is they drive them too fast where they can't, you know, they can't slow down enough to pick up the linebacker. I do think they can run the outside zone somewhat, but I think they're more of an inside zone team where you're trying to get double teams on line of scrimmage and just try and get, you know, driving hip to hip rather than moving everything horizontal. And so look for a lot more, you know, hopefully this year, hopefully for the rest of the season. I know I saw more in this first half where they're running the inside zone where you're not trying to push every guy one way, trying to get double teams that go up and down rather than, you know, left to right.
Yeah, and one other thing that I've really noticed and have been enjoying in the new NFL, because the NFL is always evolving, really has, is you see a lot of use of the tight end has coming across the line of scrimmage to make blocks. We don't have a tight end who's quick enough to do that. And I think that's part of our run game that's missing too, is that being able to crack that back on the opposite end defensive lineman, linebacker that's coming across with those outside duties, the opposite side containment duties. I think we're really missing that part of our run game right now. And I'd like to see that instituted at a much stronger level than we for the Texans right now. I think CJF could do it. That's asking way too much for either Ryan Griffin or Garrett Graham to do, though.
Yeah, and that also slows down the pass rush, too, as well, whenever you're able to let that guy go unblocked and come back across the formation and cut him. I saw CJF do it once, pretty okay, but they also played Lamb a lot, and they ran a lot of six offensive line sets, so I'm glad you brought that up. So they're kind of completely going away with two tight end sets. You're either going to see CJF or Griffin, and then you're going to see another extra offensive lineman in there because you cannot run block with both Griffin and Fedorowicz on the line at the same time. And, you know, kind of you're showing your hand. You're saying, we're going to run the ball, and I don't think it's something you can do consistently week to week. They ran a lot of six offensive line sets just to make sure they can steal the edge because I think CJF, Griffin, and Graham are just all terrible run blockers. Like, it's just – it's gross, you know, to see them.
Yeah, and Lamb got eight snaps last night, so he saw a little bit of time.
There's some
I don't mind going six offensive linemen. I don't mind that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good – and also Prosh is terrible too, so you can even put – they also put Fedorowicz in the backfield a lot too is the other thing I saw. So they would bring Lamb in, make him play tight end, put Fedorowicz at fullback because Prosh is just terrible. And, I mean, I don't even know why you even waste a roster spot on him.
Yeah, me neither. It's a waste. Fullbacks, generally speaking, right now are a waste of a roster space in the NFL.
Yeah, I guess the one thing to me, though, is that there should be enough fullbacks out there where there's, what, seven teams, eight teams that use them. So how can you not find one? I'm sure you can pick from the best group of them at all. There's X amount of college every year. And so I don't know why you can't just find some guy off the streets to replace them pretty easily. It just seems like such an easy thing to fix.
Yeah, and if you've got T.J. Yates' number still on speed dial, you got to have Bonta Leeches somewhere, right?
Well, that's all I have for the game last night. Do you have anything else you want to touch on?
DeAndre Hopkins is better than you are. And that's through the entirety of – yeah, that's through the entirety of everybody. That's how I'm going to end that. What a beast.
Yeah, I think I want to write like how I did that Jones article where I charted all – or I charted all of his targets. I think I'm going to do the same thing with Hopkins, but if I'm going to do that, I need to start tomorrow. Because he's going to end up with like 160, and that's just an insurmountable thing to try to do is watch 160 targets and put them in a spreadsheet and try not to die. So I need to start working on that soon. It's like some end-of-the-year report that you have to work on 2 months before. But let's do playoff watch. And I think we're going to – I don't know. Maybe I can find some ringtone download or something to signal it. But we'll do this every single week until the Texans are completely out of the playoffs. And right now, like we talked about last week, is there – they're in the toughest part of their schedule. This week they have the Jets, I believe, the week after that. They have the Saints, then the Bills, and the Patriots, and they get the rest of the AFC South. But for playoff watch, both the Colts and Titans run a bye. The Titans are staying last place at 2-7. The Jaguars are coming. They won on a game-winning field goal and are 3-6. And the Texans and Colts are both tied at first place at 4-5. Now, Football Outsiders just came out their playoff odds, and we have Indy at 47.4%. Houston at 30%, Jacksonville at 20.3%, Tennessee at 3.5%. And when we look at remaining schedule strength, Indy has the second easiest at 8%, -8% DVOA. Houston's 16th at 0.8%. Jacksonville is 32nd, which has the easiest schedule, -14.2%, which is a huge difference between Indy. And Tennessee is 17th at 0.5%. Now, this week, Houston plays the Jets on Sunday afternoon. Indy plays Atlanta, and Jacksonville, Tennessee play each other on Thursday night, and I really can't wait for this game. Now, we'll keep going. Like I said earlier, we'll check these as the season goes on, week to week, until Houston's completely out of it. But have your thoughts or feelings changed at all for the Texans in the AFC South? And are you back in this at all? I feel like I'll talk about it in a second, but I think I'm back in, emotionally. I think I'm going to actually pull in for this playoff run. I'm really, really in a, it's going to go badly. I'm going to be miserable at the end of it all. But I think they hooked me last night.
Well, yeah, it depends on which team shows up. Is it going to be and by team, I mean defense, right? Is it going to be the same defense that showed up last night that's going to show up? We haven't seen that defense. They haven't been existing. God, it sounded really odd when it came out. But it was a completely different looking scheme. We've made some changes on personnel. Getting McKinney back, I think it's huge. I think a really, really hope that getting Kareem Jackson back and putting him at safety to help out. Andre Howell has done a fine job. He is not built for the position. He's just not big enough. He really isn't. He's not a good enough tackler. I think if you wanted to have Andre Howell succeed, I think you put him at slot corner. So there is a lot of hope here that this is a team that can turn itself around defensively if last night is the first step toward that. If we see the Texans lining up against the Jets, basically Watt on the left end, Crick, Will Fork, Merciless, we're lining up basically like a 4-3 team most of the time anyway. If we continue to see that, if J.J. Watt is sitting at left end all day, if Will Fork is getting more than 50% of snaps, then nothing's changed. Nothing meaningful has happened from – we haven't learned from what happened against the Bengals. So I think those are the keys to look for against the Jets. If we see those things, I think there's good reason to have optimism that this team could actually make the playoffs. We needed to win one game against New England, the Jets, the Bills, or the Bengals. We've done that, which means we still get to play the Flaming Thumbtacks, the Glitter Kitties, and the Clots. All three of those games are winnable.
And the Saints, too.
And the Aints. So, you know, all of a sudden, 7-9 could win the division. 8-8 could blow out the division, for crikey's sake. So this is a team that clearly has now a very clear path to make the playoffs if they take care of business. And by taking care of business, I mean, look, win three games. You got the Titans, the Clots, Glitter Kitties. Beat all three of those, all doable, and beat the Aints. You're 8-8, you probably win the division.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to if either Houston or Indianapolis can sweep the AFC South. And I think if either of those teams can do that, that's who's going to win this division, if one of those teams can pull that off. But, yeah, like I said earlier, I'm actually kind of mad they won last night because they brought me back into this, and I was just kind of hoping the dirt would be covered on top and I would be done and wouldn't have to care at all anymore. And I don't know, just into real crap, terrible football. Without, you know, caring one bit, but here I am and I'm stuck and I'm back in it and I'm going to get my heart broken. I already know it's going to happen. But we can go ahead and preview this Jets game now. So Ryan Fitzpatrick, big brains, have another good year. He's 6% completion percentage, 15 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. He's averaging 7 yards attempt and his sack rate is just 2.4%. Now, BFD, I know you love Hobo QB. Are you excited to watch him dive around the on Sunday against his former team?
Well, I'm hoping we get to watch him. The word on the street is that we should be watching him, but the Jets are also willing to go move forward with the Geno Smith, who still exists, if Hobo QB can't go. I mean, look, Hobo QB will always have a special place in my heart because he gave me so much material for Battle Red Radio and for the blog for a solid year. The Hobo QB jokes, the fighting over the pizza boxes
because they're the good
source of protein because they might have cheese stuck to them. I mean, yeah, I'm thankful to you, Hobo QB. Thanks for all you've done for me.
Yeah, I hated him, though, last year, mainly because I was just so upset he was the starting back. It wasn't really to do with him. It was mostly Bill O'Brien. And I was just so, like, we can go back and listen to all episodes with Emi Cares Enough. But I just complained and whined every week that we're stuck having to watch him instead of getting one of these rookie quarterbacks and doing something to prevent position. And here we are again. But he's trying to watch him. He's trying to watch scramble and, you know, put every inch of himself in a 15-yard out route and all that. And, you know, he's going to throw to two really good receivers in Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. Do you think that we're going to see the secondary be able to cover the Jets receivers like how they did against the Bengals last night?
I think combined, you know, A.J. Green and I don't know if you want to go with Marvin Jones are probably a little bit less than Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker as far as talent. You know, if you want to add them up together, A plus B, C plus D type thing. I think they're a little bit more talented. The drop-off in talent, though, from those two is pretty immense. Jason Morris still sucks. Cumberland's not an answer. the rest of the wide receivers for them are basically blocking wide receivers. So there's not a whole lot of talent outside of those two guys. So the question being, can we stop them? I don't think you really stop Brandon Marshall. That's just my opinion. I think he's just an excellent player. He's somebody I really enjoy watching. He slowed down, clearly a step or two slower. He's still a fun guy to watch. We don't, but I don't think they've got enough weapons anywhere else to make us really that concerned. They are what they are. I'm much more concerned with trying to tackle Chris Ivory. He might be the hardest running back in the league since Earl Campbell. That is just a bowling ball. I can't even imagine. I can imagine tackling the dude. The guy is out there to kill you by pure physics. It's interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think one of the things to look out for, though, in this one is how, you know, Joseph and Johnson do out wide, and also how they're going to play coverage against them. Are they going to play a lot of zone? Are they going to play a lot of man? Are they going to play back off? And also with Johnson, how well he does with, you know, the penalties. You know, I think I could see Marshall or Decker getting a few defensive pass interference penalties down deep and on plays that may not even turn into catches anyways. The other thing that's interesting to this Jets team is that their head coach is Todd Bowles. I'm pretty sure I said that right, not Bowles. But he's blitzing a lot, and the Jets are blitzing okay. They're about 20th in sack rate. But I think the thing about it, though, is that with this offensive line, with Suofio in there, that's been constantly changing throughout the year, where maybe their calls aren't right, when you have three running backs back there who aren't the best blocking running backs, who are going to get a lot of free guys off the edge, you know, the blitzes are going to be a problem, and the Jets are really creative with how they do it, and they have one of the best defensive lines in the NFL, too. So I think that's the thing I'm really going to be looking out for, though, is just how the offensive line is able to pick up the blitz whenever the Jets bring the pressure.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's the big one. How are we going to match up to them with Ryan Fitzpatrick, with Hova QB, Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, Chris Ivory? How are we going to match up? But the big question, you nailed it. How are we going to keep that defensive line, those linebackers who have been doing a good job getting to the quarterback? I made the comparison to Rex Ryan's defense, the way that the Texans, like, schematically looked on last night. But, the New York Jets with Todd Bowles is basically the same thing. So we're going to see very similar defenses in those respects. It's going to be Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson in the middle are scary good.
And Leonard Williams, too.
Leonard Williams, yep. So this is a fun team to watch. Unfortunately, we're actually playing them, which makes it a little less fun. But we're going to see a lot of talent out there.
Yeah, I'm just going to be watching the line whenever Houston's on the ball. I mean, because we'll see. I'm Ryan Baum right now, like I said. And, you know, Cincinnati Bengals have really good defensive line. The Jets is even better, though. And they're the second best run defense in the NFL behind the Broncos. I think they're first in, like, yards per carry, but they're second in run defensive DVOA. And that's their strength on this team, is their ability to stop the run. The problem, though, is that the Texans probably have the worst running back trio in the NFL, and they are 31st in rushing DVOA, I believe. So I think if you're looking for Houston to move the ball, it's going to have to come at the hands of DeAndre Hopkins somehow being Darrelle Revis. And I think it's just a horrible matchup in offense for the Texans, and probably the worst matchup they could have all year as far as offense versus defense goes.
Yeah, but I said that about the Bengals offense. So what do I know?
Yeah, we don't know anything.
Yeah, Tyler Eifert was swatting passes away from himself like he was Garrett Graham out there. He's just scared to catch the ball.
Is there anything else that you want to touch on this game before we give our predictions?
Yeah, the Jets defensively, you know, we've talked about them quite a bit. You know, they've got still have Revis, who's tough, you know, clearly. They don't have the best defensive backs. I think Buster Skrien has had a much worse year than I would expect him to have. I think he's a pretty good player, but he has struggled quite a bit. If Brian Hoyer gets time to throw the ball, or TJ Yates, guys, let's just chunk it towards DeAndre Hopkins. Let's run theme routes with Washington, and I think that's how you're going to hurt the Jets. defensively. Get rid of the ball, get it out, throw it to DeAndre. You know, we talk often about why do we have like two of the worst quarterbacks in the league that are actually going to chunk the ball 50 times a game? But look at our running backs. Let's use our wide receivers like the running backs. And I think that is a legit chance for victory.
Well, both of us were wrong last week, and we're tied at 5-4. And we thought the Bengals would score a lot more points. We were pretty right about the Texans' offense, but like as you mentioned earlier, Cincinnati just couldn't score against Houston. And the entire world, we're tied, and so the entire world can't take their ears off the sounds of our voices in this incredible battle of intellect and wits. And so who do you have in this one?
I'm going to go Bengals 20 – Bengals, geez. Jets 23, Texans 13. I think that the Jets' defensive line will be able to handle us. They're going to put Revis on Hopkins. At this point in his career, it's not like, Revis is a shutdown corner still, but it's going to give us a little bit more problems. I do see this as a Jets victory. But, as you guys know, I've been a hater all year.
And you said 13-23, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Jets as well, and I'm going New York 17, Houston 9. And I just can't see really Houston moving the ball at all. And, God, it's going to be a slog to go through. And, even if they block well, it's going to be fun to watch the offensive line play. But even if they block well, it still really isn't going to matter because of how bad these running backs. And I still think Revis is a top-five corner. I think Hopkins is going to have trouble getting open against him sometimes. But I don't think it's even that. I just don't think that Hoyer's going to have the accuracy to fit the ball in those small pockets and those small windows that Hopkins has been able to create even when he does get separation. And he's pretty much the entire offense at this point. And so I just don't see – I see those two things going very badly. And I think the Jets will score, here and there. And they're able to get points on the board, here and there as the game goes on. But I think it's going to be really another slog, another sore Cincinnati game. And if you're into that stuff, you're going to have a great time on Sunday. If not, it's going to be really boring. And it's a good one to just turn on whenever you're hungover on the couch after Saturday. It's a good hungover football game. But, do you have anything else tonight? Or is that all you got? Anything else you want to get off your chest?
You talked a little about, you're having your heart back in it, your feelings back in it. I guess when you get to my age and you just become so, a nerd to like everything that's like this, this is it's a team to root for. Any team that's got DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt is going to be a team that you want to root for. It's not like we've got, Greg Hardy on the squad. So,
yeah.
We should be out there. We're, even when we are, Matt and I are hating, we're the hatin'est haters that ever hated. We're still rooting for the team. Don't kid yourself. Don't think otherwise. Don't think we're actively rooting for them to lose.
Except for 2013. We were trying to go for
the team. Yeah, that's true. That's true. We were in for, tank for Bridgewater, whatever we called it.
It was pee and poop the bed for Ted.
That's right. Shit the bed for Ted. That's right.
Yeah.
You don't have that cut.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's true. But, it's a team to root for no matter what. That's the last thing I want to say.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I root, but I just can't really completely care unless things break right, I just don't want to – it's hard for me to care enough about sports like I used to. So for me to actually, really care and put the emotional investment in, I have to – there has to be reasons for me to do so. If not, I'll root for the team, watch every game, follow it, write and learn. But there's not that, level of care that I usually have before. And if that makes me a terrible person, that's fine. But that's just kind of how it works now for me. But anyways, thank you for listening tonight if you listen live. And if you recorded it and you made it this far and downloaded it before it's able to edit out the first 5 minutes, I'm very sorry. And thank you for listening to the whole thing. We'll make sure the British lady doesn't screw us over again like she has been.
Hold on. We missed a question. Let's answer the question real fast. We missed one from Kay Batima. If Rat continues his great defensive performance throughout the year, would you want him to stay another year or still change the coordinator position? Ask me after game 16. Because if the defense looks like it did the first 8 games, no. If the defense looks completely different, different the next 8 games? Probably.
Yeah, I really
probably
think,
keep them.
I couldn't say it any better than you just did. I don't know how I missed
sorry,
that one.
Sorry.
I guess probably. Yeah, I guess it was probably going through and trying to see if he might hear us or not. But anyways, if you listen, I thank you if you made this far. And if you, you know, you might have down before as you let it out, but next week we should have it perfectly good and fine. And we should have some, you know, really proper music maybe. But, and if you ask questions like, Cable Team, I'm sorry, I almost missed it, but thank you for the questions and you'll keep answering them as well. Or keep giving us questions as well. And if you like the show, tell all your friends, you know, anybody and everybody, listen to us on iTunes, go ahead and rate and review the show as well. We'll be back next week, the same time Tuesday at 7 o'clock. And hopefully there's no, you know, no more problems again. I'm Matt Weston, and thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio. And thank you for being on tonight, BFD.
Thanks for having me. Do I sing now?
Here's the song.
I wanted to sing. Damn it.
Just sing a little of a tune for next time. We're going to keep this as an ending from now on.
See, I hung up on you.